Please be aware that the podcast you're about to listen to is explicit and graphic. So shoo those tiny humans out of the room and let's have some grown-up time, just you and me, okay?
All of my life, I've never fit, but I won't complain and I won't quit. I am enormous. Get used to it. Everyone tells me I'm too much. Maybe it's just you're not enough for me. Can't you see? I'm the kind of woman I'm supposed to be.
Hi there, and welcome to the Body Storytelling Podcast. I am sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour, your tour guide to the wild side, and this is episode 107. This week, we have a story from first-time storyteller Hannah Hoffman. But first, I'm so glad you're here. You know, body storytelling is not a confessional. I was raised to believe that you don't tell your business. But clearly, someone who's been doing a live sex and storytelling series for 13 years and who has a podcast about sex, kink, and gender probably didn't really follow that role very well. So I'm going to tell you what's going on with me, even though it's incredibly embarrassing. It's not related to sex and kink, but it is a true personal story. And I like to connect with you in whatever way I can. So you may remember that I was on tour late in 2019, and that at a certain point in that tour, I started getting really sick, and while I was in San Francisco and supposed to be on stage that night, it got so bad I had to go to the emergency room. Well, I have no health care insurance, but I went anyway because a dear friend of mine called me because I was in so much pain, I couldn't concentrate, I couldn't think. And I texted her and said, I need somebody to be a grown-up because I can't think. She informed me that San Francisco General had a setup for broke-ass storytellers. And that was where I should go if I was in pain. So I went to the emergency room. They first thought I had cancer. And then they changed it to an infection of the colon and the intestines. And they admitted me overnight, and they released me less than 24 hours later. A couple of days later, I was about to go to the next leg of the tour to New York, and I had fought really hard to get permission to get on a plane to continue on with shows, but when they said okay, I didn't really know whether I could do it or not. I was really bad off. So I contacted the local clinic in the system of the hospital that I'd gone to. And I said, is there any way I could come in and see somebody and possibly get some prednisone, which will help me mask these symptoms and the pain that I'm in and help me continue this tour? And I went into the doctor's office not far from me here in Bayview in San Francisco. And a woman doctor came into the office. She looked a lot like Anna Gasteyer, the comedian who used to be on Saturday Night Live. And when I walked in, she asked me what I was there for. She was kind of distant. And then she said, well, let's just check you out. She put her stethoscope on my back and doing that chit-chat that doctors do while they're examining you. She said, so what do you do for a living? And I said, well, I'm a professional storyteller. And she stopped and she went, oh, I love storytelling. Do you ever listen to the Risk podcast? And I said, yeah, I've been on the Risk podcast like 6 or 7 times. And she just came around my front and stared at me and went, you've been on Risk? And I'm like, yeah, I've done a number of collaboration shows with Kevin Allison. Risk and Body Storytelling have done many shows together. She's like, holy shit, you're famous. And I'm like, yeah, that's what's going on here. I have no health insurance. Is there any way I can get some prednisone? And she's like, well, you know, I was gonna say no, but you're like famous and a big deal, so I'm gonna see what I can do. She instructs an orderly to come in and take blood and examine me, take my blood pressure. And she comes back 15 or 20 minutes later and she's kind of downcast. And she says, they won't let me. I'm sorry. I talked to another doctor. He said you're too immunocompromised for us to give you prednisone. Can I give you something else? I'm like, no, I just want prednisone. I know that that will work. I know that that will make me feel better. So I guess I'll just get on a plane and hope for the best. And I was pretty sick at the New York show. In fact, Kevin Allison was in my New York show. And in the green room, I said, Kevin, I want to say thank you. You almost got me prednisone. You almost made me feel better because you're famous and a big deal. And by knowing you, it kind of helped me out too. But somebody who wasn't in that room vetoed the prednisone. He thought that was pretty funny. So recently, this cold that I've had or flu or whatever it is kept getting worse. And I decided that I should probably try and go back to that clinic and see if I could get them to give me some antibiotics. Still have no health insurance. And I don't think that's anything that's going to be remedied really, really soon. So the thing with the hospital and emergency room that I went into is that they use a paperless system. And somehow I'd come across one bill that said $3,800. And I had a feeling that wasn't the whole bill. But I'd been in the hospital less than 24 hours and maybe that was some wishful thinking. So I figured eventually I'd find out how much I was going to owe and see if I could negotiate, you know, a reduction in the bill. So I go in earlier this week into that clinic here in Bayview. And I walk in and say I have an appointment. And the receptionist says, did you want to pay your $31,000 hospital bill today? It's pretty overdue. And I stood there and turned green and went, $31,000? And she's like, yeah, did you not know that? I'm like, no, I have not figured out your system yet and I haven't gotten a bill in the mail. And she said, you're not going to get a bill in the mail, but I can tell you that's what you owe. And we'd love for you to pay it today. By the time I went in and they checked my blood pressure, they said, wow, out loud when they checked my blood pressure. And then the very same woman doctor came in and said, hey again. And I said, hey again. And she said, what's going on this time? And I said, I need antibiotics. I think this is bronchitis. She started checking me out. And while she was listening to my lungs and my heart, she said, so I've been listening to your podcast. And I'm like, really? She goes, yeah, I heard the whole story about the fiasco with the hospital and the lack of insurance and all of that kind of stuff. That was an amazing story. And I wish doctors could hear that story so that they could hear what it's like for patients and what they experience. And then she says, why is your blood pressure so high? It wasn't nearly this high the last time you were in. And I'm like, because when I walked up to the counter, when I checked in, the receptionist asked me if I was going to pay my $31,000 hospital bill today. And I don't have it. And she said, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Our medical system is so broken, isn't it? That's insane. She goes, how are you going to pay for your meds that I prescribed for you today? Because you've got walking pneumonia. And I said, I'm going to go on the Good Rx app and I'm going to hope that I get a decent price. And she said, no, hang on right here. Just stay put for a minute. And she went into the supply closet with all the samples and she gave me cough syrup and cough drops and antibiotics and, you know, everything to get me through and said, I'm sorry, I can't do more. So I got more than your standard time with a doctor because my doctor started listening to my podcast. That's a pro tip. If you ever really want to be listened to your doctor, start a podcast. You know, I've learned there's lots of people, not corporations, but there's lots of people in the system who are really good people. The corporations, I don't know, it's pretty insane. The healthcare industry, we all know is broken, but I'm having a firsthand experience with that right now. If you're one of the people who wanted to know how to help, I'm going to put links in this episode to PayPal and Zelle and our Patreon, of course. I appreciate anything you can do because I don't know how I'm going to dig my way out of this hole. And I mean, it was a relief that it wasn't cancer, but I don't know how I'm going to do this one. So it's going to be part of the ongoing saga. Storytelling is personal stories. And then you're going to get to hear the stories that are featured on the stage at Body Storytelling. This is not one of them. Let's continue with the episode, shall we? Thanks for listening. I was checking out our recent reviews on Apple Podcasts for the Body Storytelling Podcast, and so many of them say, "This is my favorite podcast. Please don't ever stop producing it, Dixie." And the way to ensure that that happens is to support us on Patreon. Patreon is an ongoing way to support this podcast and keep it going because podcasts cost money to produce. While I make money on live shows, it is not enough to cover the costs of the podcast too. So be one of the people who actually helps rather than just listens and enjoys, because you guarantee that we all get this. If you go to patreon.com/body and you give it whatever level you can, it's a monthly way to support the podcast and show your appreciation for it. There is nothing like this podcast. We've won a ton of awards and I want to keep doing it. I want these stories to get out to the places where they need to be heard. So you can do that by going to patreon.com/body. You know how to spell body. Support us at whatever level you can. If you support us at $10 a month, you get your episodes ad-free. And beyond that, we have tons of prizes. You can get story coaching with me. We can talk about your stories or just do a tete-a-tete. Or we can even do a live body storytelling for you. One of my high-end supporters who is going to have her own live body storytelling contacted me last week, and we're making plans to throw a special private body, and it might even be in international waters. I have a feeling it's going to turn into that kind of party, you know? But regardless of whatever level you support us at, it helps make sure that the podcast continues. So thanks in advance for your support on Patreon. Are you curious about this week's storyteller? Well, Hannah Hoffman is a pansexual, polyamorous food anthropologist who hosts her own quarterly vagina celebrations. And no, you can't come. Food anthropologist? Ask her how her academic paper From Beard to Bears discussing gay men, food, and sex was the hit of the Association for the Study of Food and Society conference. She believes that you should know that food geeks are some of the sexiest, most hedonistic people in existence. She was raised in Berkeley, spending time here and there, and Hannah gleefully left in 2006 to attend grad school in New York City. Returning to the Bay Area has been such a joy because it's the most sex-positive city on earth. She makes a mean donut. This storyteller is Hannah Hoffman.
Birthday to me. Thank you. 43 is awesome right now. That gives you context. It's important you know that. So in seventh grade, Mr. Permessi kicked me out of algebra class because my equations were in the wrong order for the answers that I was getting. And he made it very clear to me that that was okay, because if I was lucky, like the other girls in class, a rich man would marry me, and I didn't need to know math anyway. So with that in mind, I decided I should get ahead of the plan that was just laid out for me, and I went home and I took a cucumber from the refrigerator and I walked into my bedroom, said hello to Sid Vicious on one wall, Beastie Boys on the other wall, closed the door, got under the covers, and was determined to put this very popular yet sizable vegetable into my inexperienced seventh grade vagina. And I got it in. I got it in like about, you know, the tip and then a little bit more. And it was wondrous. And my dad's girlfriend, Vicky, opened the door and started yelling at me to take my backpack out of the living room so she could do her jazzercise. And I had two hands under the covers with a cucumber inside of me. So I pulled it out and I took a really enthusiastic bite and I said, I will do it as soon as I'm done with my snack. See, because, and that, so I was the 12-year-old girl. I was the fat girl in school. I was the ugly girl in school. I was the girl that nobody wanted to have anything to do with. And I was bullied daily, and I was shamed for my body at home. And my fucking first masturbation session with a vegetable was interrupted. So, because I had it in my, and because of these things, I was terrified that I was going to die a virgin. So if I got practice, then maybe the boys would like me. And I did end up losing my virginity when I was 13 years old to a college boy who looked like the hair band Sebastian Bach and Kid Rock. And Thad worked at Rainbow Records and let me get through that process. And then the next 3 years, I spent having lots of sex. And I had a thick, curvy body, I had big breasts, and boys liked it, but men really liked it. And this scared the shit out of my parents. And so my father and his now wife, Vicky, decided to send me away to bad girl school. And bad girl school touted to my parents that they had an emotional growth program that would prep me to be successful in the world. It was called CDU. It means see what you do and do something with it. And it was a co-ed school located 6,000 feet in the mountains, in the San Bernardino Mountains, in John Houston's old log cabin. And it was on the edge of a very inescapable, very steep ridge. And CDU used tactics, their emotional growth tactics were things like sleep deprivation and controlling the food that you ate and not allowing you to wear certain clothes and keeping you away from your parents. And their punishments were things that ranged anywhere from manual labor to total isolation from your peers. And they had a no sex rule. And that meant that you could not flirt. You could not move your body in a way that they thought was provocative. You could not think about sex. You could not have sex. And you certainly could not masturbate. At CDU, you were not allowed to say no. And I learned to masturbate totally silently. And I left CDU at 18. And I rented a furnished room in Berkeley on Virginia Street from a woman who worked at night. So I've had some freedom for the first time in 2 years. And I went to Good Vibrations and got myself a Doc Johnson's pocket rocket, the white one with the red writing on it. And I was again on the bed in this blue Holly Hobby quilt that her grandmother had made. And I turned it on and I was turned on. And I felt an orgasm coming through my body and it was coming into my chest. And then this water came out of me and I was like, oh my God, I think I just peed on her bed, and I don't know what just happened, and I don't know what that is. And I smelled it, and it wasn't urine, and I was like, I've heard of squirting, like, is this what that is? Like, I don't know, is that what just happened to me? Like, I had no idea what just happened. So the next 20 years, I am dating men who are very societally acceptable. And they were very perplexed by my increased, very determined desire for sex. And I was often questioned about why my libido was so high, to the point that in graduate school, my doctor put me on Prozac so that I could focus on my dissertation. It was effective, but not entirely, because there I was riding the 6 train, and there was this really handsome guy. He worked for the city, and he showed me a bathroom in Grand Central Station where we could fuck. So a little bit of me was still peeking out. And through all of these things, I was still trying to discover my sexuality. I was still trying to discover where I fit. And I was on OkCupid, and there's Mark. Mark looked like Dwight from The Office. Mark was married, and Mark was polyamorous. And that is a word that I had heard before, and I was really curious about it because it seemed like something that would really suit me. And I went on a date with Mark, and then I met Mark's wife. And then, for my 40th birthday, Mark gives me a beautifully wrapped present from Kat, who is Mark's wife. And I open it up, and it is a Hitachi magic wand. And not only at that point, I realized that I had a partner that was really interested in my pleasure, and so was his wife. Polyamory. So, I was like, this is cool. So we end up on the bed again, not the Holly Hobby bed. It's more grown up. And he turns it on, and I am like, I have never felt anything like that before, okay? And like, I had never had an orgasm like that before, and another orgasm like that, and another orgasm like that, and another one. And I then, like, I can't stop. And there's this splash that happens all over the bed. And Mark is like, oh my God, you're a squirter? And I was like, oh my God, am I a squirter? Like, is this what's happening right now? Like, I guess that was what was happening, and I began to explore that a little bit more, and my polyamorous dates seemed to really enjoy that as well, and it was very welcomed and encouraged, except for that one time with Alan. He thought it was really gross, and he kicked me out of his very fancy South Beach penthouse apartment because I made a mess, and I was like, that sucks for you, dude. So, yeah, and I left it there for him to do his own fucking laundry. So with a new sort of confidence, I let this start happening, and I was scrolling through Tinder, and then I see Perry, and I'm like, oh. So Perry looks like he has the jaw of Christopher Reeves, and he has some super Ira Glass happening. And oh my God. And he has enough Jeff Goldblum to make Dixie really jealous, okay? So my partner, Perry, is the first person that I had an orgasm with penetrative sex. And Perry is the first person that I had an orgasm when he went down on me. And Perry is the first person to take me to a sex party. Yeah. Those are my favorite things. And we had this, like, I was doing so much laundry, you guys. Like, I had piles of towels that were like I couldn't keep up with it. And one day, Perry walks in with this package from Canada, and it says no more wet spot on it. And I'm like, well, what is that? And he's like, well, this is this blanket, and it says that it will soak up an infinite amount of liquid. And then, you know, you don't have to sleep on the wet spot or whatever. And I was really skeptical, because I'm like, really? And then I was really excited, because I was like, really? So us being us, I was like, well, let's do some science. So I took my No More Wet Spot blanket into the kitchen, and I put it in a metal bowl, and I weighed it on a very precise scale, and it came up as 39.04 ounces. Okay, so I took it into the bedroom, and about like 2 hours later-ish, we emerge very wet and really eager to see what our experiment is going to tell us. And the blanket weighed in at 79.08 ounces. So for the math that I wasn't supposed to be good at, that is about 2.5 pounds of water. That is a quart and a quarter of cum that came out of me. It did not smell like pee. So I had spent so much of my life being shamed for what my body did and shamed for what my body looked like and told that I was a dirty whore at Sea-Doo and that I should be disgusted with myself and that no one would ever want to touch me or have sex with me until I knew how to behave. I am a very bad girl. And I am part of a community. I am part of a community that gets really excited when I bling my blanket to sex parties. And I am having the best sex and the best orgasms of my entire life. And it feels so beautiful and it is so damn correct. So.
Inside of me, that I like to see the place. that ass on fire. I could be the guy that treats you to a nice movie feature, but I don't wanna mislead you. Tonight I think I wanna be dirty, girl.
You wanna get dirty, girl? Come on,
let that ass on fire.
You wanna get dirty, girl? Come on,
let's go.
That song was Gush by Pharrell Williams. So this week I have a big occasion to celebrate. This week is my 30th anniversary of leaving the South and coming to San Francisco. I'd lived in the South my entire life, first in the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia, and then to Atlanta, Georgia. And I wanted to know where they didn't use that word. I wanted to know where racism was not as rampant as it was in the South. But I'd never left the South, so I didn't know where that was. I started asking questions, and pretty soon I figured out that one of my closest friends, who had moved to San Francisco to get his master's in poetics, lived in San Francisco. So I called him, and I said, "Do they use that word in San Francisco?" And he said, "No, they use it in Oakland, but it's kind of different." And he extended an offer to sleep on his couch. So I gave him a notice at work, and I got my Toyota truck, and I hooked up a U-Haul behind it, and I drove cross country all by myself, which was scary and exciting. Every night I was in a hotel, and nobody knew where I was. I loved that sense of freedom, and I want to drive back across the country sometime soon. But 30 years ago on January 26th, I pulled into San Francisco, realized there is no place to park a Toyota truck and a 5x8 U-Haul trailer, drove around the neighborhood 20 or 30 times, burst into tears, and eventually the local gas station took pity on me. But they said, "You better pick this thing up before 5 a.m. when we open." It was a rough landing, but I moved to San Francisco sight unseen, and I'm still here. I love San Francisco for the way it's changed me. For the way it's made me realize that telling your stories changes the world. Not only is it the most sex positive place I've ever been in, but I really don't think I'd be doing what I do if it weren't for living in San Francisco. This week I'm going to be in Vegas, so if you're in Vegas and you want to meet up, let me know. I'm going to be at the Adult Novelty Expo and at AVN this week and hanging out with my friends Sonny Megatron and Ken Melvoinberg. So I'm going to watch their presentation they'll be giving. I'm going to be going to the O Awards for the adult novelty industry. I'm excited to get back just in time to celebrate my 30-year anniversary in San Francisco. And that said, I want to tell you about upcoming live body storytelling shows because, you know, this podcast is just a little piece of a live show. At a live show, we've got bango, we've got cocktails with great names like the Unicorn's Butthole and the Ethical Slut, and the greatest audience anywhere. Our audience is so enthusiastic. They're so supportive and so ready to take people who come in off the street and never had any experience with this sort of storytelling. And they make them part of the family. They say, you're part of our community now. Congratulations, you're a pervert. And we mean that in the good way. You talk about sex openly, you are open-minded, and you think about sex, because that's how we define pervert. You're one too. You're listening to the podcast right now. So let's talk about what's upcoming. On February 19th, the Rebar Seattle has asked us to celebrate their 30th anniversary with them. So my 30th anniversary in San Francisco, their 30th anniversary in Seattle. On February 19th, in honor of their longstanding contribution to Seattle's musical heritage. Do you know what they're famous for? They are famous for the fact that Kurt Cobain had his first record release party at the Rebar Seattle, and he was so unruly that they threw him out of his own record release party. I love that. That's kind of why I ended up there. On February 19th, in honor of that, the theme is going to be sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That show is selling like crazy right now. We are going to have a new musical act. We are going to have some special stories related to that theme, which I haven't done in a very long time. So I hope that you're going to join me in Seattle on February 19th. And then our big 13th anniversary show in February is going to be on Saturday, February 22nd. It's a two-show night. The first show is going to be my handpicked rock stars, and the second show is going to be Best of Body. We're about to release the survey so you can vote for the stories that you've heard on the podcast, or maybe you saw the live show, and you're going to help us choose the lineup. Whoever wins Best of Body, whoever you tell me, that's who's on stage at the 10 p.m. show. So that's a two-show night. You can get a wristband to see both shows. And we've got these new VIP tables. We're going to get dirty gift bags. In fact, so many of those tables have sold. We're more than halfway sold out on them. And I've added a two-show table. So if you want to be on the front row with sexy gift bags, you can take the vibrator and put it in during a story if you want. Then you should grab that as soon as possible, because I expect in about a week they're all going to be gone. That's what's coming up in February. And if you go to Body Storytellings, click on live in the navigation bar. Marty has created this new page through Bands in Town, and it's right there on our website. You can always see when the next show is, and it's listing the shows through June. So plan your travel. I hope to see you at either the Rebar's 30th anniversary show or Body Storytellings' 30th anniversary show in San Francisco. I want to see you at a live show soon. And speaking of live shows, thank you to Good Vibrations for being the sponsor for Body's Bango Prizes. When you fill out a card and put your name on the back, at a certain point in the show, I call the winners up on stage and I unload bags of goodies into their arms. And those goodies come from Good Vibrations in San Francisco, and they come from Babeland for the Seattle show. Thanks so much to Good Vibrations and to Babeland for providing our bango prizes. Well, that's this week's episode of the Body Storytelling Podcast. I want to say thank you to the people who make this podcast possible. Thank you to podcast producer Marty Garcia, to sound engineer David Grossoff, to video archivist Joe Moore. Thank you to you for listening, for telling your friends about the Body Storytelling Podcast. So many people tell me they find this podcast because their friends recommend it highly. And you could recommend it to people you don't know yet if you could go to places like Apple Podcast and write us a review. We are really, really close to 400 reviews on Apple Podcasts, and hitting that number would help us a lot. It boosts our signal. I'd appreciate anything you can do. We whizzed past 2 million downloads not long ago, but that's just a fraction of the people who need the sex education and the entertainment that our true stories can provide. I am sexual folklorist Dixie De La Tour. This has been episode 107, and here's a peek at what's next.
You probably should get some leather restraints. Handcuffs kind of hurt. And I think, great, I'm already learning things in college.